Good afternoon and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy, and we're so glad to have you with us on this breezy fall and I guess now rainy day. Our guests are two very bright lights in Alaska. They come from different parts of the state and different Native communities. Based on their work, I'm guessing their typical days are nothing like each other's, right? And yet the record reflects that they both work very hard for a smart and bright future for all Alaska Natives. Please welcome Liz Medicine Crow, Tlingit and Haida from Cake and Juno, and CEO, President of First Alaskan Institute.
Hi, thank you.
So glad to have you here.
Really good to be here. Hau'a. Yeah.
And also, hi, Allison Warden, an Inupiat Eskimo poet, writer, and performance artist from Fairbanks with ties to Kaktovik.
Hi, hello.
So you can tell they're really here because you can hear their voices.
We're here.
I know. It was a miracle. It's a miracle. But anyway, they live in Anchorage today. And we have them for a full hour, and we can talk about anything. We're going to talk about family. We're going to talk about work. We're going to talk about art. But we want to welcome our audience. If they have questions for Liz or for Allison or they just want to give a shout out to them, we welcome that. So let me throw out the numbers, and then we'll start talking. So if you're in Anchorage, you can call 550-8433, outside Anchorage 1-888-353-5752, and you can email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So welcome to Liz Medicine Crow and Allison Warden. I'm so thrilled. I think I was stalking Liz for at least a year, and I think I stalked you once too, you know, and it just wasn't meant to happen. Schedules didn't work. And then we were at the Light Brigade, and Allison was up performing with the name of
Yada Dee.
Yada Dee,
yes.
Which was so fun.
So good.
And Liz was there at a table with some other women, and I happened to sit down there, and we recognized each other, and Liz said, "Let's do it.
Yay.
Let's do it. We'll see if Allison can do it." And we got the yes, and so here we are. And I'm just thrilled. I just feel like it's a gift to give to the listeners of our station and to the state. So very, very, very pleased to have you both here. And I want to welcome you and tell you that I'll start out the conversation. I want to talk about family. I want to talk about work. But push the conversation where you want to go. If I'm not bringing something, Allison, if you feel moved to give us a little something.
No pressure. No pressure.
We don't want pressure. You do not have to do anything. You're here. We're grateful that you came. So anyway, I thought since I've made the point that you come from different parts of Alaska, let's start there. But let's quickly go to Juno and how you really knew each other. So You're from?
I'm from Keequan. Cake, Alaska, in southeast, about 90 miles south of Juneau on Kupreanof Island. And just want to send a lot of big love to my village right now today and to my Jackson family. Mm. And I come from a really amazing community. The people of my community always are there through thick and thin for each other. And, you know, Cake is traditionally a Tlingit village, but there's lots of other folks who have moved in. I'm both Tlingit and Haida. My Haida family comes from Haida Gwaii, and I have lots of Haida family from Haidaburg, Alaska as well, and all the way around southeast.
Yeah.
And
when you think back to growing up there, what memory tops your head? Is there a place? Is there the kitchen? A smell?
There's a sitting around the busy table of my grandparents' house, drinking coffee, having coffee time. As a child, you know, in our communities, we were raised, and many still are raised, and we should raise more of our kids this way, I think, to listen to the conversation that was happening around the table, to bring water, coffee, tea, nooks, snacks.
Nooks, snacks.
To the visitors, the other people who were sitting around the table who were older than you. You didn't have to be told. You didn't have to be asked to do this. It was part of our being raised to take care of our guests. Very hospitable, and just really listen to what was talked around the table. Native
sharing.
Issues, clan stories, who was doing what in terms of events and gatherings, things coming up, parties, gu'ichs that we needed to prepare for. what basketball games were coming up, you know, all the good stuff. That's my favorite.
A kind of a knitting together, it almost like everybody's on the same page. We're all sharing the information. Let's jump to you, Allison. Tell us a little bit about where you grew up.
I grew up in Fairbanks, Alaska, and I would travel as a young being to Kaktovik, Alaska, where my mom was raised and lives today. So that had a very... my relatives would come from Kaktovik and visit, and my mom's house would be a gathering place for lots of different activities. So I felt very tied and connected to Kaktovik my whole life, and still now. And also to Barrow, because my mom, we have family from Barrow also.
I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. So if you think of a smell or a scene or something that you treasure from those growing up times, what would it be?
A snert.
I totally knew you were going to say that.
All right.
It's a game where women sit around and they... I just saw a picture of my sisters in Anaktuvik Pass. Some of them... There were 12 women in a circle with cards going on the floor. And it's a fast-paced, fun card game. And you can play in partners or solo as a group.
It's like speed plus solitaire.
Yeah.
And it's super competitive.
I just remember it being a time for lots of ladies coming together, sharing food, laughing.
Yeah.
As a young kid, you know, there's other kids running around. Mm-hmm. So
you play it at the kitchen table?
Either at a table or on the floor. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. That's great. And by the way, Allison called her mom in Kaktovik just before the show. So we don't know if she's able
to
hear.
Hopefully
here online. If there's any chance, we want to welcome her and say
Hi,
thanks.
Marianne.
Yeah. I thought that was lovely that you did that. So then as you arrived today, I learned that you guys went to high school together. So I want to hear a little bit about what was high school like.
Painful. That's so hard to be a teenager.
Yeah, it is. It is really hard.
We became friends independently on our own. We found each other. And then we found out that our families had been friends since they were in high school.
Really?
Yeah.
So your parents had been friends? Or
my
uncles?
Mom and my uncle were best friends with her mom.
Her auntie and aunt, uncle.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Since high school days.
Because they all went to the boarding school, you know, how they had to go
Would
to boarding school.
Would it have been
Sheldon Jackson?
Oh, Sheldon Jackson. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So they knew each other. Now, did you guys click immediately? I mean, or was there some bonding experience like gym or something horrible?
No, we bonded pretty immediately. Both kind of artistic spirits. I think we really both really loved the arts. She was definitely into the performing arts, and I was a little bit more of the visual arts and, you know, writing and things like that.
Yeah, I was going to say, were you the artist and you were the leader?
She's an artist.
And let's
she's
talk.
A photographer, and she makes amazing things.
She's dragging me out.
She went to school for photography. And
wow.
So, you have a background in photography, and she makes these beautiful things.
Oh. So Allison has been involved in theater for a long time. And
even in high school?
In high school. And she was one of those people that, you know, you just knew you were going to have fun with when you were with her. And mm-hmm. she worked for the Lady Lou Review.
No! What's this?
Close your ears, everyone.
Okay. Reveal. We need this reveal.
Change the
channel. It was one of those tourist things down in Juneau, and so she had to wear a can-can dress.
No!
I rocked it out.
She totally did. And I remember the first time my dad ever saw her, we were walking down South Franklin Street, and she was standing outside wearing her can-can dress and her combat boots.
And a mohawk, I think.
And she had a huge mohawk, and she was wearing or holding a sandwich board to promote the show. And I said, Dad, that's my friend Allison. And he was like, wow.
This runs
it's
deep
been going
in your
on
core.
For a long time, yeah.
This is in your DNA.
I was comfortable.
Yeah. She was the bomb.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's she was so a musician and all that stuff.
Were you guys studious?
Studious?
I think people would have. I think people would say I was a nerd.
Yeah.
Definitely.
A nerd.
I love to read. I took my studies seriously because I knew it was my way out.
And you wanted a way out.
I wanted a way out of what I was experiencing in terms of high school and
You
know, the issues around race issues and in Southeast and Juneau specifically. And I wanted to, I wanted a way out so that I could find a way back in, a way back into helping our people in Alaska.
So how about you? Did you go on to college or what did
I did for a little bit.
Where did you go?
To UAF. And then I went to New York City for audio engineering for a year.
Wow.
I'd like to go back.
Yeah.
I think it would open a lot more doors.
I bet.
Yeah. So, I mean...
You might find yourself in school again. Now, I know I saw with you, Liz, a little interview. I think it might have been with Lori Townsend. But you were talking about going to Bates and being homesick and deciding to call your grandmother.
Oh, yeah. I was like, I remember. It was Lori I was telling her about. I was really homesick, and I figured I could call my gram, my non, we could say nonny, and that my nonny would... support my decision to leave college. And I called her and I told her that I was really, I called her and I was going to tell her I was really homesick. And when she picked up the phone and she was in Cake, she picked up the phone and she said, "Oh, I'm so glad you called. I was just praying for you and I was just thinking about you. And I know how hard it is to be away at college, you know, so far away from home and you can't come home every day." And she said, when I was in college, because when she graduated from Sheldon Jackson in 1935, she was sent to Asheville, North Carolina, to Asheville Normal Teachers College. She graduated in 1939, a Haida woman from Haida Gwaii. She didn't start speaking English. She hadn't seen a white person until she was in about third grade. So her world was so vastly changing and diverse within her time span here with us.
It blows my mind to think about that.
It's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah.
So she answered the phone and she said this to me and she goes, "You know, when I was back east for school, I was so homesick, but I couldn't come home. I had to work during the summers on the East Coast because, of course, she couldn't come back home." During that time, she lost her brothers and stepbrothers to tuberculosis and her stepfather and wasn't able to come back home. I mean, this is, you know, in the 1930s. So she's telling me all of this stuff, and I'm listening to her, and she says, "So what's going on? How come you called me?" And I said, "Nothing.
Never mind.
Just wanted to say hi."
She knew what I needed to hear. I mean, what a strong person to have in your family.
I mean,
yeah.
Blessing.
A protector, but also go on out there. You can do it. Yeah. Is there somebody like that in your life?
Yeah. I mean, my mom got her master's degree, which was a pretty big endeavor for her to take, you know, uproot us from Fairbanks and our life there when I was just barely a teenager.
Yeah.
And go to Dubuque, Iowa, and finish, you know, her program there. So that that was really strong modeling for me. And
Commitment.
Drive
to get it done. What did she study?
She's a minister, so she got her master's in divinity.
Very interesting. I always like those people. I want to sit next to them. There's just something about them. They feel good.
Aura around her.
She has a warmth.
A warm, yeah. So, well, I wanted to start with your families just because I thought we don't take enough time to share about our families. And I thought that was really lovely. But I thought we'd move into a little bit about your work because you're both really very accomplished people. Now, they're laughing.
Or at least busy.
I don't know about accomplished.
Me too. Well, I don't know that many people really, for example, Liz, really know what the First Alaskans Institute does. It's kind of a think tank is what I've read. If I go on the website, I see studies they've done. And I didn't know really even the origin. I found out it had to do with work potential or work possibilities that didn't happen after the pipeline was built. It was a settlement of some sort. So now what would you describe as the mission?
Oh, man.
Missions.
I think that's one of the biggest blessings I have in my life right now is that every day I get to go to work and put my heart and my mind and my spirit into a place of working on behalf of our people. And that's what the organization is really about. So our vision is progress for the next 10,000 years. A lot of people have a hard time putting handles on that because that's a long time for folks. But as Indigenous peoples to this land, in our homelands here in Alaska, we have a past of at least 10,000 years to look back on. And that's really important. And we have a responsibility to steward that knowledge and steward that connection and that spirit through our time here on Earth, and so that we can also connect that to our future. Mm-hmm. And so our work is really strength-based at the organization. Our board, our founding board, and our current board really put into place a framework for leadership development and created the Alaska Native Policy Center, which is the think tank Native Minds Shaping the Future, and community engagement. We publish the First Alaskans magazine that people would be familiar with, and we do a community investments program, and we really are right now really looking at holding a mirror up to ourselves as an organization, ensuring that we're walking the talk in terms of integrating our cultural values and who we are into the organization and to the work that we do, and then working to really empower our Native people and make sure that Native voices are involved in shaping all the decisions that impact our lives and our communities. Yeah. So that's an amazing thing to be able to help in every day.
Yeah, it's important work, and it's feels so wonderful to have important work to do, you know? And I guess, you know, do you feel like you see the dial moving? I mean, that's another, when it's so big like that, how do you know, you know?
Oh, man.
That's hard.
Man, you know, it's incredible. There's so many amazing stories out there around the entire state, each of our regions, each of our cultural groups. There's so much kinetic energy. There's so much action and things happening. And too often, you only hear things reported that are kind of, you know, issue related, problem related, mm-hmm. barrier related. You know, I think it's pretty significant that despite all the things that have happened to Native peoples here in the state, we're still here. We're thriving. We love who we are. We're trying to find ways like water to make it work in everything that we do. We're still hunting. We're still fishing. We're still gathering. Those activities are a way for us to give new life and expression to our cultural way of being and our way of framing and thinking of our place in the world and our responsibility to our lands. Mm-hmm. And man, there's just so much that's happening.
Yeah,
there are real issues and real things happening that we have to pay attention to, and we have to add our knowledge to and make sure the total context, the full context,
the whole
is shared.
Story.
Because too often there's just only a small bit, and that's framed by somebody else's worldview.
Yeah.
And I think, especially here in Alaska, we're all big enough people, smart enough people, people who really care about this place, to be able to expand our worldviews. And this is a really diverse place.
It is incredibly mm-hmm. diverse, yeah. I want to throw out, just if you've just joined us, we're speaking with Liz Medicine Crow. That was Liz talking about mm-hmm. the First Alaskans Institute. We also have Allison Warden here in the studio. And if you have questions for them or you just want to say hello, this is a great opportunity because these two women don't get the chance to be together very often. They lead very busy lives. So our numbers are 550-8433 or outside of Anchorage, 1-888-353-5752. And we'd love to take an email at alaskapublic.org if you'd like to do that. So let's go to you, Allison. Let's
yes.
talk about your work. Now I know that it began in high school. The performance arts began in high school. But,
yes.
you know, you just manifest as a creative person. I mean, just today you have a bright shirt on. You had red glasses on
yeah.
and a white hat that looked like it had little ears on it.
It's a polar bear hat.
Okay. And so, and I said, you just, you're in living color, you know,
yeah.
and you said color's always
I'm
been
important.
I'm
3D.
3D. I'm the 4D. Real, the real deal. So tell me about getting up and performing and, you know, how you moved toward that as an artist, I mean.
I started performing when I was 16, started in theater. So I've been involved with theater, with Perseverance was really my big thrust into the theater scene in Juneau. And, you know, for some time, I tried other venues for myself to put my career through, you know, a different way, working at Ilaskovic College and, you know, doing
up in
some,
Barrow.
Yes. Yeah. Some other kind of work like that. And my heart kept going back towards art and theater and music.
Yeah.
So, and installation art. So that's where, and working with youth, I think that's the biggest thrust of what I love to do. Mm-hmm. So doing workshops with youth, inspiring mm-hmm. them, showing them a different way of being, expanding their worldview, and, you know, encouraging them mm-hmm. to really be themselves and listen mm-hmm. and, you know, take in information.
Contribute.
And yes, yes.
Yeah.
And how important their voices are. So hopefully to empower them to use their voices in a creative way by showing them through example. Yeah. One example.
Yeah. One, and I mean, you're not what they might expect. So saying, hey, I'm this way and it's great. You can be however way you want and it's great too.
Yeah.
Is that part of why you love all that?
I like to show them and that, you know, the elders are really, really a lot more open-minded and embracing than, you know, the elders are my biggest fans, I like to say, you know, even with my rap performances. And so when the young people are looking towards what they want to be or what they want to do, or that they can find support in with elders and with family and in unexpected places.
They don't think that way. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How do you talk about the elders so they realize that they're fans? Are there stories there? I mean, did you have some interesting interactions with elders where you came to understand each other or?
I've just been really blessed to interact with elders at Elders and Youth Conference is one big chance to really engage with them. And through them seeing me and getting to know me more and me getting to know them, you know, I went into Dena Kanagana in Fairbanks, which is an elder place, and I just wanted to say hi to them and visit for a moment and see who was there, and because they're so much fun. And they were like, you're the rapper. Rap for us.
Did they really do that?
Yeah. So, you know, that's if a rapper, you know, Alaska Native rap can be supported by elders, then I hope that the young people can feel that they can really push the boundaries of what they think they're capable of.
Yeah,
and
so they
know
don't,
that they'll be supported too.
Doesn't have to feel like a rigid, there's one path, one expectation. You know, the world can be multicolored, multifaceted.
It's about living the values and honoring where we came from mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. finding a way to do that at the same time, being who we are and pushing, you know, the edge.
So one of the things that I really love about the way Allison engages with people is that it's just Allison. It's her full heart. It's her fullness. And she is a conduit. And I think that that's one of the things that we've experienced as she's hosted, like, the last few of our Elders and Youth Conference. She's a conduit because she can connect both with the youth and with the elders, and she can help bring them together and give them a place of really being able to engage. And it's not just on a hi, how are you? It's we're experiencing something together, and we can talk about these issues that we have going on, and we can do something about it.
Yeah.
And she gives voice to feelings that we have as Native people, but also really encourages the young people, like an auntie should, by being there and saying, hey, let's go, do this, do that, help me out. Ooh, you're good at that. Come on, let's go, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And she gets people to help without them questioning whether they're capable of it or not. They just give. Mm-hmm. And there's people in the world who have that ability, and she's one of them, to get mm-hmm. people to do that. And people respond.
That's very nice. You touched her heart.
I'm sniffling it over here.
And pulling the tears away from the corners.
I'll tell them about you. But even her rap lyrics, because she does it spontaneously. You know, she can prepare ahead of time for things. That's amazing.
But one of the things that really connects is she can be in the moment with our elders and with our youth, with our adults, with our leaders, and she can share a story about our community or the way we feel about something or issues, and everyone feels the same in that moment, and she brings people together that way. And I think that that's an incredible gift as a storyteller. And I think whether it's performance art or rap or, you know, singer-songwriter, whatever way you engage with her, you're going to get her.
Yeah.
Well, I just want to say that Liz...
A mutual admiration society. Yeah. What's your next question, Kathleen? Let's not do this. Anyway, on a lighter note, yeah. Allison.
People might not know that she really inspires me as a human being. And most of my... We have talks. We get together and visit, you know.
Yeah.
And it's through our conversations and the way that you talk and think about things that really, really inspire me and the work that I do.
Do you bring problems? I mean, do you bring issues? You know, do you bring personal problems? Mm. Do you bring, I'm exhausted, I'm burned out, I don't have any more? You know, what is it that you end up connecting over?
Everything. Food. Yeah.
Humor.
Laughs. Our families. Yeah. I mean, one of the things that I think it's not so much about me and Allison. It's about who we come from. The gifts that she has, those don't belong to her. Those are ancestral gifts that are passed through her.
Wow. Yeah.
And that's the way that's how we've been raised.
So
we were raised in a very similar way.
Sounds
so
like
that we're so different.
Yeah. And so we have a very strong foundation of understanding. And so from that, you know, when you are blessed to know someone for over 20 years.
That's shared history. Yeah.
And to be part of each other's families. And I mean, it's just a wonderful blessing. And so you can, you know, humor, anything, you can connect in all kinds of different ways. But we can have some really amazing conversations, and through the conversation come out with some really interesting approaches and ideas to things that we're facing
as
a people.
I really liked what you said, Liz, about the gifts aren't ours. They just happen to be coming through us at this, so they're to be shared, which is a different way of thinking about talent. A lot of times people are like, okay, I have talent. Now I can have money. Now I can have, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a really different... You're really framing it completely differently.
Our ancestors prayed for us, you know, for many, many generations, and we're reaping in the benefits of their prayer and thought and hope and love for us. Mm-hmm. You know, we're manifested today, but we're, you know, we're part of a long line of people.
It's not just me. It's everybody that was pushing me, you know, coming up and supporting.
And we're representing them. I mean, we're the lucky ones that get to
be here.
Here.
Yeah. And then we have and carry and cherish the same dreams for our kids.
Yes.
And our kids in our community, you know. And
that seems undefeatable. It seems like could never be. It's so ingrained. It's been trampled on by one culture coming in and dominating and you know, all kinds of things. It's an old story. It's not a new story. It's not even unique to us. But when you hear about those bonds and the strength of those bonds, you think nothing is going, you know, nothing is going to defeat
this. They just get stronger.
Yeah.
And, you know, we do have some real challenges, but when you think about our villages in Alaska, and you think about the people who have been on these lands for thousands of years and what it took to be there, what it takes to be here, what will it be like for our kids in the future? And one of the things that I think many of our Native cultures have in common is that we have names that don't belong to us either. Mm-hmm. Those names travel with us through time, and they're handed down, and you bring back members of your family through your name.
Yeah.
You know, the
constant reminder.
The constant reminder that you have to be one of my board members tells the story about the importance of our Native names. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he said, for a while, your name carries you. For a while, your name carries you when you're growing up and you're a younger person and you're trying to get your legs under you as an adult.
Yeah.
But at some point, you have to start carrying the name.
Yeah.
What are you going to give back to it? That's Albert Kukesh. He would tell that story about the importance of naming our kids from the moment that they're born so that they have that connection.
We're going to take a little break now. If you just joined us, that was Liz Medicine Crow and Allison Warden. You're listening to Hometown Alaska, and I'm Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I have two wonderful guests in the studio today. This is just a conversation with these guests. We have Allison Warden, who's a performance artist that you've seen in Anchorage at just about every venue and in Juneau and now in New York and, in Europe. And then Liz Medicine Crow, who is the CEO and president of a very important job for First Alaskans Institute. But really, they've been relating to each other as sisters, as, I don't know, in some way, soulmates, able to talk deeply, able to laugh, it's just very, very refreshing and fun to be here. Let me throw out the phone numbers, 550-8433.
Call us.
Problem corner. Problem corner, you're on the air.
I'll answer. Does that relate to an old story? Or?
No, we're just being funny in the moment.
Yeah. Because that's a really important show for everybody out in the Ville. And you can call in and wish happy birthday to everybody.
And we're ready to take your calls.
And people having food sales.
Call us.
The news.
We will solve your problem. Quickly.
No matter what it is.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let me throw out the statewide number in case anybody's streaming us. 1-888-353-5752 or send us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So I promised that we would get into some meat and potatoes.
Okay.
And because there's lots of important issues. Not that I don't want to start down a dim road of gloom and doom. Nothing like that.
But reality is reality.
Reality is reality. And so Liz wore in a button. Brian Malott is running for governor. And one of the questions I thought about asking was, when will we see more and more Alaska Natives in leadership roles in all areas? And so Brian's, we've had them. We've had them in the legislature. We've had strong legislative leaders. You mentioned Al Kukesh. I mean, I think of Reggie Jewell. I mean, Willie Hensley.
Yeah,
I mean,
George Anna Lincoln, Al Adams. We've had some great, we have some really great people in there now.
We do. But I want to see, on assemblies, on community councils, and so I just, wonder if there's a particular reticence to do it, or what do you think about that? I mean, is there leadership is done differently, and these forms of leadership are less attractive, or any thoughts you have about it, Liz?
Yeah, I think you ask a really important question, because that actually is some of the stuff that we work on in our Alaska Native Policy Center. As a Native woman, just speaking personally, the fact that, and again, this is just me speaking personally, the fact that a Native man person is running for the office of governor in the state of Alaska just really excites me and inspires me. I think about my grandmother and my grandfather, who were really active in the Alaska Native Brotherhood and Alaska Native Sisterhood. These are seminal organizations over 100 years old who were really instrumental in pushing for civil rights in Alaska. The story of what we have done in Alaska is important. the territorial legislature with Elizabeth Paratovich and the anti-discrimination bill. That's significant because that happened in the 40s, you know,
and before it had happened.
Before it had happened in the, yeah. you know, in down south. Yeah. These are really important things for us to remember and to be proud of as Alaskans.
Yeah.
You know, nothing's peachy cream. We have real issues. So, you know, as a Native woman, I'm really proud that Byron Mallott has thrown his hat in the gubernatorial race. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited about that.
Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned the Alaska Native Brotherhood and Sisterhood. Maybe I was wondering whether there were parallel power structures that were significant to Alaska Natives and that running for the legislature was something, yes, we have to do, but it isn't ours. I wondered about that. Yeah. And is that a persistent feeling or transient?
I think you have to really peel the onion,
yeah,
on a lot of things around that issue. What we're trying to do in terms of my actual work at First Alaskans Institute through the Policy Center is to really engage Native people and to empower them to run for office if that's what they want, to be involved in their tribal governments and run for those offices if that's what they want, to participate in community councils, but really to get Native people at the table. Because our issues, our challenges are probably very similar to other people's issues and challenges, and our ability to participate in that conversations not only expands the base of people who are able to work on it, but it also expands the amount of knowledge that's at the table that can be tapped as resource and solutions to some of these really huge
different
challenges.
Different perspectives, different way of looking at things. I mean, that's just enriches. We know that nature works better with all kinds of diversity in it. Yeah. Everything works better with all kinds of diversity in it. So that's, you know, I hope we live to see all of those things come to fruition.
Yeah.
Change is another one and I don't know if you have any particular, you know, songs or anything. I mean, if you take on issues in your songs, I feel like I listen to often is support, like a lot of support to young people, like, you know, validating them in some lyrics. But mm-hmm. do you sometimes take on issues in your...
Yeah, I mean, I had a show called Virtual Subsistence, and... Liz's husband, Cloud, had a pretty big role in that show, which I was really, really thankful that he was able to step in.
Was this one at the MTS?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was focusing around subsistence and land issues in an artistic way. And I was really pleased with how that happened because it took its own shape and took its own, it had its own story and journey, which was different than what I had thought it would be. It kind of molded into something new.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
it was a way to engage the community with art, talking yeah. about an issue that was happening right then around subsistence.
Right. One of the other things that you do that I love is that she's able to, again, the translation, that storyteller thing, through her rap and through her spoken word, she is able to connect people with the reality of life in Kaktovik around the polar bear and tell a much different story than people have probably ever had access to really understand the landscape and the people and the importance of that connection.
Yeah.
And I think that her rap lyrics can both be supportive and inspiring, but they can also be like right on point with a little bit of a political bite and a political kind of satire edge.
Mm-hmm.
So it really depends on her audience and who she's participating.
Yeah. I mean, you've done so many different things. Ode to the Polar Bear. We mm-hmm. talked a little bit about Time Immemorial, which yeah. I saw. I think it was at Cyrano's. That just was fabulous. What it brought in some really big issues. Like I remember the woman sitting and mending a net and I think the missionaries were coming in, and the reactions, you know, to that, and
yes.
what was that going to mean? And that's a huge part of Alaska's history, and a difficult mm-hmm. part, you know, gifts maybe some, but also some very difficult things. So, you were in a story able to weave in and actually give me a perspective I hadn't. Actually, an individual woman's perspective, you know, not the history books and the analysis, but just a kind of. What is this going to mean?
That's what I like about art is that you can, you know, touch people in a way or jolt them off of, you know, what they
think might be expected, and help, you know, shake their worldview a little bit and help them think about an issue or something in a different way or in a different light, or look at it from a whole nother angle.
Right.
And maybe have some movement where there was some stuckness before.
Stuckness. I like that.
Stickiness.
Stuckness.
That's good. I like that.
That's really, really good. It made me think that you have to be very aware of audiences. I mean, you might have an elder youth audience. That's one very specific audience and a mission there that you're working on. But then there's like a sort of an Alaska non-native audience that is trying to understand, and you're able to reach out to that audience and give it to them in terms that they can understand in a very human way. That's a gift, really.
Okay.
I mean, I think that's true. Anyway, we have an email, and I always try to like...
An email?
Yes, yeah, so let's see what it's...
Hello. I was hoping to get a call.
I know.
Call. I know you're listening, you people.
I know, and I really want to do the problem corner.
Who is going to call on our problem corner?
Okay, here we go. This is coming from Mark Mesteller, and he says, "Hello, I really appreciate Ms. Medicine Crow's comment about looking and thinking about the next 10,000 years. This is truly the correct time frame for us to be considering when thinking about the future of all peoples. Knowing that energy costs are a critical issue across Alaska, a First Alaskans Institute involved in efforts to promote energy efficiency and the transition to clean energy sources." That's a question. I didn't read it like a question, but he's asking. There is a question mark there. Uh-huh. I think he's asking, are you going to support clean energy or involved in that in any way?
To a certain degree, we are. Through the Policy Center, we have a couple different research focuses. And one of those focus areas is around strengthening the sustainability of our villages and Alaska Native communities. And that, of course, is inclusive of the cost of energy. Mm. And we are definitely supportive of our tribal governments and our local communities deciding what is best for them and supporting them and empowering them to move forward in those endeavors. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everybody talks about the cost of living in rural Alaska and have targeted energy as a key and critical way to actually reduce that cost. And I think that there's some communities who are doing some good work in that area. I think we need to... do some things that we can do right now today. We don't have to wait for a program, and that is to, and this isn't just for Village Alaska, this is for the urban and city areas as well. If you're not in the room, turn your light off. If your windows are leaking and you're getting cold air inside the house, winterize, weatherize. There's some great programs out there. Mm-hmm. Things that we need to adjust in our lifestyle. You know, we consume a lot of goods and we waste a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm. And when you lived in a time when you had to carry everything with you, or you just didn't have excess. It's just kind of, there's so much stuff. Everybody has so much stuff, and it's sort of a modern way.
You would love this. One of our mutual friends, his name's Rico Wuerl. He's an artist. He put out a question on Facebook the other day, and he was like, "What do you use mason jars for?" And like, I mean, talk about a jar of many uses, something ubiquitous to Alaskans. If you aren't from Alaska and you have just moved here, you probably already own some in your cabinet, right?
Here, your drinkware.
Exactly. but we use it for everything. And that mentality of really reusing and making the most of the things that you have is something that I think our people are really focused on. I mean, we have major challenges in our communities. Mm-hmm. I went to a village and I went to a hub. This wasn't even just an even more remote village. This was a hub. And I had just been in Fred Meyer's here in Anchorage, and a case of water here was $4. A case of water here was $4, and I went to the community out there at the hub, and it was $30.
Oh, my gosh.
For a case of water. Now, that's outlandish, right? It's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, a 12-pack of soda was $14.
Mm.
So... when you think about health issues and availability of goods and services, You know, those are really important things to think about. The other thing that I think is important is I've heard people talk about, well, living in rural Alaska is a choice. And for me, as a person who is from a village and really believes that one of the most unique and beautiful things about Alaska is that we have village Alaska, we have rural Alaska, is that, you know, as Native people especially, these are our homelands. There's not a choice in this kind of consumer-specific kind of life or worldview. This is our homes.
Yeah,
there are homes. And so as citizens living in our homes, no matter where we choose to live, what are the things that we can do together as a community, our governments working together to actually make it so that it can be healthy, thriving communities, no matter where we choose to live? Because choice is, you know, definitely subjective.
Right, right. I want to welcome a caller.
Oh, okay.
Yay.
I wonder who it is.
Well, so hello, exciting. Jack Dalton.
Hi, Jack. Oh, your ears must have been burning.
Well, I guess so, because I just turned on the radio. I'm like, oh, it's you guys. And then right when I did, you said, oh, no one's calling in. And
oh, thank you. So good to hear your voice.
Yeah. Do you have a problem, Jack?
We can solve it.
Oh, that's what the problem corner is. Okay. I thought you were talking about some issues and you wanted input.
Oh, yeah, sure.
No, we just want to work on your problem, Jack.
Okay.
No, just kidding.
I'm doing pretty good.
Oh, good to hear you.
And hearing you guys laughing and joking is just...
It's good medicine.
Yeah. Well, and Jack, Mr. Jack Dalton is also a very established performance artist.
He is.
We were talking earlier, Jack, about Time Immemorial and how about the play, and she brought up the scene of the fishing, repairing the fishing line. And
the husband talking about the missionaries coming and what is that going to mean. And just
we only have to go to church on Sunday.
Yes, that's it.
Yeah. And it just brought all these memories of working with you and the play and just how, you know, what an impact, because she saw the play.
I loved it, yes. I saw Raven's Radio Hour, Ode to, you know, I think many people have seen your work and really, really value it. So more, Jack.
One thing I think it'd be cool to say about Time Immemorial and working on writing Time Immemorial, because Allison and I wrote it together, was the deep connection that we felt with our ancestors, as well as being in this modern theater environment. And I think that's one thing that especially people like Liz, like Allison, like some of our other Native performers, like Umyo and people like that, that are we're not just in one world or in the other, we're in both of the worlds at the same time, and feeling truly connected to them. And that's why works like Time Immemorial came out, because people like Allison have that connection, and I was lucky enough to be there and feel that connection and bring those stories forward.
You know, I was thinking that Alaska's a very complicated place because I don't know if you heard this part, Jack, but we were talking about the last 10,000 years and, you know, how your name is given to you, how you can live on your name for a while, but then you have to earn that name. I mean, it's just there's a lot there. There's not just this audience at this theater that I'm going to put on a program for, but there's this history involved. There's many different audiences in a place as diverse as Alaska. Mm-hmm. You know, we have many people migrating here from all over the world, not just the lower 48, and then we have a thriving indigenous population that we're still learning about, you know, still emerging, I would say, not to Allison and Liz by any means, but to the larger world. And getting to share in that is just really very special, and art is a great way to do it.
Yeah.
So, well, Jack, we're so thrilled that you called in.
And thank you for calling in, Jack. So good to hear your voice.
Yeah, good to hear your voice, Jack.
Yeah, have fun for the rest of it. I can't wait to hear what else you're going to talk about.
Okay.
Happy AFN. We'll see you up in Fairbanks, right?
See you there.
I'm not going to be up there. I'm getting ready to go down to Homer for a month.
Oh, shucks.
Oh, yeah, I know. Okay. I know about your Homer. Okay. He's having an artistic residency down there.
Oh, wonderful. Ooh, congratulations, Jack. Yeah.
All right.
Well, you'll tune in. You'll tune in to AFN and get caught up, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, good luck, and thank you.
Okay, bye.
Let's see, we were talking about issues, but did we have any more we wanted to talk about? We have about, I don't know, 7 minutes or so, and I was thinking, I like to look optimistically to the future, and, you know, both personally, you know, but also, you know, I mean, we're probably going to be able to sail through the Arctic Ocean here pretty soon, you know. You know, maybe there'll be Wi-Fi in every village and all kinds of jobs that will then be possible, that people can stay where they want to live, you know, and I don't know. I mean, who knows what it's going to be like?
Well, I do know that, you know, our peoples, our Alaska Native peoples, have an incredible story. And another way of viewing the way you, as a person, engage with the world. The ability to connect to that is so important. And I would just want to encourage and welcome all the folks who have moved to Alaska, to try to spend some time in the villages. And, you know, the cost of travel interior to the state can be exorbitant for regular folks. And it does take some commitment and some level of really saying, I'm going to do this, because it, you know, it's cheaper to fly down south to Seattle and
yeah.
New York City. And
yeah.
You have to really say, okay, I'm going to get out to the villages, you know, and really experience what makes this place so truly amazing.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that we encounter as Native people is that there's so many different cultures here that it's hard for people to kind of keep them straight and understand what's unique about each of them and all of those things. And and then when we try to do like Alaska Native language revitalization and all those really important cultural revitalization, you know, people are like a little challenged with, well, how do you do that for all of them?
Yeah.
And can you pick one over the other? And really it's about understanding it's, you don't have to make a choice over one. You just have to support all and lift everybody up together. Our diversity is what makes us strong.
Mm-hmm.
Our diversity helps us to see things in a much different light. And, you know, there's a variety and an amazing resource of people out there who can actually bring new ideas forward. And as Alaskans, not just as Alaska Natives, but as Alaskans, we have a responsibility to create an innovative environment here so that we're not just stagnating, so that we're not just resting on our laurels and saying it's good enough. It's
yeah.
not good enough. We
yeah.
have an amazing place. We have to contribute to it. And it's even better when we can be like relatives together, sitting around a table, having some coffee and talking about what really matters.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you guys have some advice for Washington, D.C.
In fact.
Yeah, I mean, just that idea of really sincerely talking and not posturing and not flamethrowing. I don't know. You know, just when I think back about the sequestration, which was a kind of made up problem, mm-hmm. and then the most recent one about, you know, maybe going over the cliff with our not continuing.
The fiscal cliff?
Yeah, fiscal cliff.
We should be worried about the cultural cliff.
Yeah, yeah.
What's
because
going
that's
on
the
with
thing
our
that,
society?
That, yeah, well, that might save us from, you know, the kinds of behaviors if we had those, you know, human behaviors. We're flourishing, mm-hmm. and we were flourishing as humans. Maybe we wouldn't be doing some of that crazy stuff. What about you focus a lot on young people. You rap for young
yes.
people. What about the whole screen business? Everybody's got their screen. You know, I have my screen.
Yeah.
We all had our screens before. What about, does that interfere with our ability to be together? Or what do you think about that?
I have my screen.
And she's good at it, too.
I've been starting to make a conscious effort when I'm with people and with family and with food. I put my phone or somewhere way far away and I just purposely let it go for that time.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So
you have to manage it.
Yeah.
This is a bit of advice from
yeah.
from a pro.
Yeah.
Manage that.
I
yeah.
mean, there's a balance, you know, of, you know, sharing what you're doing and then just doing what you're doing and really experiencing it without having to you know, post or photo it or video document or.
Yeah.
So you guys, I learned.
Thank you. I actually, we're running out of time.
Oh,
I'm so sorry. But I just want to say thank you. Thank you to Liz Medicine Crowe, Allison Warden. And I have to say, next week on Hometown Alaska.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.
Our host next week is Charles Walforth, and he'll be talking about the Celtic New Year, talk about visitors to Alaska or newcomers to Alaska. Pat Yak is our Vice President of Public Media. Kristen Platt is our audio engineer. Thank you for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy, and thank you so much, Liz and Allison.
Thank you so much.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.